Welcome to the Question Will Behavior Podcast. This is your host, Edison. Please don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @_QBPC. Also, give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere that allows stars. We have a special episode today. We're out in Atlanta, Georgia. We're here with the founders of Imagine Music Festival. If you ever heard of Imagine, maybe you're not an EDM fan, but anybody that's an EDM fan has heard of Imagine at this point. So please, first of all, introduce yourselves to the crowd and just tell us a little bit about, you know, Imagine Festival and what we're going to expect this year from it. Because I know every single year you guys have made another move forward, another bigger step. This year you're adding a fourth day. Sure. So tell me what we're expecting in 2019.
Well, I'm Maddie from Imagine Festival.
Yeah, and I'm Glenn Goodhand from Imagine Festival. Hey out there. Thanks for having us, Questionable Behavior.
So Imagine this year is going to be bigger and better than ever. It always gets bigger and better every year, but this year we added a fourth day, like right. You mentioned. We've added additional experiences, so we have a really neat activation that we're actually going to introduce next week, but I can leak it to you guys now. We are doing a gaming activation with Fueled by Monster Energy and also our friends here from Atlanta Access Replay. So we're setting up a whole gaming lounge for the gaming enthusiast. And we also have some headliners from our bill, including Diplo and Alice in Wonderland, who will actually be playing a tournament for us.
They will actually be involved in the gaming side of it. Okay, so
playing with some professional players that have come in.
Exactly.
Okay, I was just going to ask, are you bringing in
So we're bringing in some professional players to play with them. We're going to live stream it on Twitch. It's going to be a really, really neat activation for us.
And Team Valkyrie.
We have Team Valkyrie. We have FaZe Clan. And we have a couple other guys from Monster that are going to be just special guests, and we're super excited.
Both influencers and pro gamers, so it's going to be a good time.
Really cool.
So will fans be able to actually like interact with artists in this, you know, in kind of like a their gaming
scene? So virtually, yes. Virtually, they'll be able to. So they'll be live streamed, so they can see the artists playing, and they can talk to them and stuff, so it'll be really cool.
It's our first year of getting into the gaming space. So we're excited about it. Obviously, I'm sure everybody's seen the marshmallow thing with at Fortnite. And so we thought it was a neat opportunity. And there's definitely a nice blend with music and gaming now. And so we thought it was interesting. We'd like to try to be a little ahead of the curve. And there's some good folks out there in the gaming community and in the music. So I think it's a great marriage. So it's our first year kind of getting involved with the gaming community. And so we're excited about it.
Yeah, we just so happened to book some of the best gamers on our lineup, so why not give them a chance to play?
Is that something that, like, because this is the first time you're doing it, so is it, like, different for you to be seeing fans excited about, you know, someone in the gaming industry? You know, this is, even for me, it's a brand new industry where it's just, like, it's unbelievable that the Fortnite winner, he just won roughly $4 million, you know? So, you know, seeing, like, this whole huge community following the gaming, you know, professionals, is it like something that you caught on to and you're like, okay, we'll get it here? And because
I think we're just always trying to introduce our brand to more people and tell more people about the Imagine Festival, and so this was an opportunity to reach a whole new demographic, a whole new market. And it's kind of funny because Glenn actually has a couple nephews, and when we told them about all this,
they're young,
they're like 10 or 12, but they were so excited. They knew more about these gamers than I'd ever even heard of. So it's definitely a great way for us to reach some other markets. And it's just interesting, the similarities between people who like EDM music and gamers. I mean, it is an electronic based sort of, I guess,
platform.
So there's a lot of common similarities that people seem to like.
How do you guys manage to find, because right now I was looking through some of the stuff that you guys are offering this year, which is like the whole wellness, the yoga, you know, the pool party, the gaming. You're almost making it into a festival where someone can come there and just stay there all day and never have to even come out of the festival to see Atlanta. So how do you guys come up with all these new things that you add every single year?
I think, each year I think we come up with new and exciting things. It's sort of a challenge to get a little bit better each and every single year and provide more interesting things that are happening inside the grounds. It's certainly a destination type festival for us, and we're making moves in, you know, 1, 3, 5 year plans, even 10 year plans at this point, to really, really start creating some really super exciting environments and things for people when they're there. So for us, as far as the creativity side, it's like we're seeing what other people are doing. Certainly, I think it's always important to see what the best in the business are doing and just take notes on it. You know, if it seems like they care about their customers, which we certainly do, their guests, then you know, while they're doing that seems to be working, and it's you know, it's you can tell they give it, you know, they care about all their guests. And so we, you know, we it's very important for us to
to emulate kind of sort of
the
same
like
feel.
If they're doing something like that we think makes sense and makes the customer happy, then why not, you know, do something similar and with our own spin to it, certainly, you know. And I think that's how we slowly start to improve. But as far as the creativity side, the transformational classes, the artwork and all that stuff, I mean, we have in Atlanta alone, we have some really, really great artists, some really great performers and great transformational type classes and teachers. And so we like to tap into the local market, not just in that transformational type classes and in artwork, but also in the performers and the talent and the DJs and the even in, all the way down into the production and everybody else. I think we sort of pride ourselves in sort of at least being part of the community and pulling from the community, not only worldwide talent, but also pulling a lot of great talent from the inner community here.
So Atlanta in general, I mean, as far as New York is involved, we look at Atlanta like the place where people are collaborating, people are working together and kind of keeping everything in-house, just like you were saying. So is that like a sort of just something that's came naturally from being in Atlanta and being here a while, where you take local bands, you mentioned that you use local contractors for a lot of stuff for the festival as well. So is that just the kind of like the aura in Atlanta in general, or?
Well, I think that just in the scene for us, it has always been about giving locals a platform to shine on and giving people an opportunity that they might never have had before. And so, especially for our locals and our local talent. And so we've wanted to bring up local artists, local production crew and staff, and just anybody. The festival is really giving us a platform to be able to expand on that. So when we started bringing locals up, now we're able to bring up different, like we talked about, transformational workshops. We're able to allow those people to be involved. Wellness, yoga, we have the production team, and Glenn can name probably more than I can, but just it's just about giving everyone an opportunity to shine, really.
The festival started, well, the promotions business started, Iris started as a after party promoter. And right. So we were doing after parties 20 years ago, so on. More of like a quote-unquote rave type.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, you started with a house party called Deconstruction back when.
Yeah, that one.
And
Deconstruction.
Then that turned into
the
after party.
Yeah. Did I mention that somewhere? That's a
probably.
That's an old one.
I haven't even heard that one.
Yeah. Deconstruction. Wow, that was a long time ago. Yeah. So that was the actual first party in Atlanta, I suppose. I was been doing parties since high school when I wasn't supposed to. Sorry, Mom. Sorry, Dad. But when you were going out of town.
Yeah, well now that he has imagined, so it's all forgiven.
That's right. Thank you. Now I have to thank you for that. No, but I've always enjoyed entertaining people. It's sort of been my passion, like showing people a good time, giving people an escape. And that's kind of, you know, we've just continued to grow that. And in being able to show people a good time is sort of what gives us the impetus to keep going. And I don't know, that's we just love it when we get those sincere compliments and people are, you know, after the first year, you know, we lost a tremendous amount of money. I imagine we lost a tremendous amount of money. We thought we were going to make a bunch of money. We lost tons of money, more money than really we'd ever even could conceive of. Yeah. And so, we were thinking, oh, what are we going to do now? Type of thing. But then when we would go out to the grocery store or go out to a club or wherever we were going, and someone would come up to us and say, wow, you know, you guys, I had to thank you guys so much. Like, you guys changed our life, like tears in their eyes, literally, about how much it meant to them. And that's what, like, totally changed our lives, really. And it was almost a spiritual thing to us. And like, wow, like, I can't believe what we've helped produce moved people that much and changed their lives, some people's lives, and just had such a great time that it moved them to tears. I mean, that, you know, that's invaluable. And it's something for us that's given us the drive to do this venue and to do Imagine and everything else, just to try to give people, you know, a great time, escape for a minute. You know?
So the whole concept of Imagine, initially you wanted to create kind of like a more homey festival, a smaller inner city festival, which I think you mentioned before you wanted to kind of take it national and do global things, but it grew kind of within the first 2-3 years. You guys already went to a bigger venue. So was that something that just came unexpected, and how do you deal with the growth like that?
I want to talk about Deconstruction too when we go back to that one.
We'll go back to it right after.
Yeah, so how do we deal with the growth initially?
Like, because you just said the first year you lost money, so you know, a lot of people wouldn't even be motivated to go into the second year. And then I think the third year is when you guys went to the Speedway. So growth, that's coming from, I guess, 6,000 daily visitors to almost 20,000, 30,000 now. Yeah. So how do you deal with that exponential growth? you know, not losing exponential money from the first time around?
Well, I'd say, so the first time around, we lost a lot of money, and in those moments where we didn't know what to do, where literally his mom was buying us groceries, there were moments like that. And then we'd go into the grocery store and we'd happen to run into somebody that had seen or wasn't imagined, and they'd tell us how it changed their life. And so in your lowest moment, you'd come to a situation where it's almost like a sign telling you, hey, just keep trying, or you did something good. You know, that there's something here. It would validate what we're doing. And so we kept getting these sincere compliments, and we said, okay, well, we need to figure out a way to just keep this, make this happen. And if all those people had a really good time, if they all bring a friend, you know, we could actually do this. You know, we can be where we need to be. And so that's what we did. We tried, and we made it happen, and everybody brought a friend. And so we doubled our numbers our first year, or our second year.
Second.
And then that's when, at that point, we'd actually outgrown that venue, and we needed to find a place to move. The area was also being redeveloped. So no matter what, it was time to find a new location. And then just the growth that we were experiencing, we decided, well, you know, it's because when you move, it's like starting at year one again and not really knowing what the budget's going to be and just all these new challenges. So we said,
and I'm sure you need a lot more people for the venue.
People, so. Yeah. So we were like, well, if we're going to move, we're going to do it once, and we don't really want to move again.
We're trying to find a new home.
We're trying to find a home, you know.
Right.
And so we moved to, we found the biggest venue that there is in the Southeast, because we feel like there's no limit to our growth. And yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, I guess, it's always been a challenge, and it's been risky for us. We're one of the only surviving independent music festivals still out there. And so that's tough. It comes with its challenges, but it's also very nice. You know, we can make decisions on the fly. There's not a lot of red tape, but we feel like the people that are out there can feel the difference at the festival. It's not a big cattle call. You know, one of the reasons why we started Imagine initially was we were going to other festivals, and it just felt like it was very corporate feeling. It was a box up there. There wasn't a lot of art. There was overzealous security, and it was just felt like we really should do something that segued from the weekly promotion that we were doing already, ESP 101, and what was the next step? And that was either to have our own club or start a festival. And the club happened to fall through that year, and so we're like, oh, well, let's do this festival and try to give ourselves a blank canvas on what we think we would enjoy. And that's kind of what was the basis of it. It was sort of a customer first, customer created, guest created is what we like to call them, or family created type atmosphere and philosophy behind the build of the festival. But it's definitely been a challenge. We get compared to top five, top 10 festivals all the time. And those are the ones with the unlimited pockets and the corporate backing and everything else. And so when people are on Reddit or wherever it might be, and they're saying, I don't even like to give them the plug there, but when they're on different channels and they're mentioning things like, oh, why don't they do this that, you know, some of the biggest festivals are doing, or like, believe me, we want to do it, and it's coming, but and we're going to do it better. But it's just for us right now, the biggest challenge is really just economics and trying to grow at a nice, fair pace, but keep control and quality control over what we're doing, and may really, again, put the customer first on everything they're doing. We do a nice survey at the end of every festival, and we take every single one of those issues, we look at it, we try to analyze it, and try to find out the solution on anything that our guests have issue with, that so we can solve it for the next year. So each year we really try to address all those and come up to the next step.
Part of your growth is definitely your connection with the fans and actually, you know, listening to what they have to say about the festival. And that's how you've been able to kind of grow it and make it and bring it to that basic.
Sure.
You know, give them what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just ask. Like, it's so simple.
People that I know that I've been have only great things to say. You know what I mean? They like the feel. They feel like I said, they can stay there all day, kind of. They don't even have to go to the city. They're just there for the festival and don't have to move left or right. And now even with the Speedway, you brought camping in there as well. So yeah, it kind of has that Coachella feel where, you know, we're going for a camping trip and enjoying the music festival.
There's a couple festivals out there that we look up to. EDC Vegas, we think Pasquale does care about his customers. I think Electric Forest does a really good job. Shambhala, there's a few festivals out there that we're like, you know, you can just tell the difference when someone, we think that they can tell they care about their customers. And so we're sort of this melting pot between like an Electric Forest and a EDC Vegas and an Ultra. You know, those are the ones we look up to. You know, we think they're doing a good job, but we're right on their tail. We think we're right behind them, and we're going to give our customers, our guests, a great experience as well.
So you've definitely done firsthand market research because you're mentioning these festivals. So you must have went there and experienced that festival firsthand to kind of get an idea.
Well, we were festival goers before we started this.
And I was going to touch back on the timeline, trying to bring it back to deconstruction a little bit.
You've
been kind of like a catalyst for the EDM scene in Atlanta since the 90s.
Yeah, the late 90s. That's right.
I think there was like a little gap, and that's when you guys came back together and had the Imagine.
Yeah, that's right. So I can expound on that a little bit. So, you know, I'll give you the nutshell version. Otherwise, we'd be here for a couple of weeks. But but basically, I grew up in New York, and I really enjoyed going out. I was a B-boy.
Right.
I enjoyed dancing.
Which I heard that. I was wondering, like, is it too late to, like, bust down a move for the show or what? No.
You should see it. He's really good.
just to get on that, like, the last time I was trying to impress a younger generation on my moves, I literally tore my Achilles tendon. So that's what happens.
No tearing of Achilles tendon. He did just tear his ACL.
And I just tore my ACL. So anyway, I'm getting a little too old for the strength moves.
We'll just trust you on your word.
I used to be good. These days, it's a little bit less of the strength moves and more of the, you know, more flowy type stuff. I can still flow for sure, but the more of the power moves aren't there as much anymore. I have two kids. I gotta take care of still.
Yeah.
So, but you know, back to deconstruction. That was crazy. My friend, I had moved down here, and one of my friends was doing a party in an abandoned house that was about to be torn down. Tim DeGroot, and he said, "Hey, come. You want to come help me? You know, tell a few people about this show." And it's really cool. We're gonna be in an abandoned house. We're gonna play house music, and after the show, we're gonna tear down the house. You know, it's getting abandoned. We're gonna tear it down. I said, "Okay, that sounds fun." You know, I love house music. I love electronic music. I love parties, so let's do it. And, you know, and that was the first one that I helped on. It was not my event, but I certainly helped them do it. And I was an engaging person. I had a lot of friends when I first moved down here, even. And so people, I guess, you know, it was easy for me to say, "Hey, why don't you come to the show?" And so eventually I started doing my own after parties. That was sort of the start of it, of Iris. And then from there, after the after parties, I started doing my own events. It sort of segued into doing my own shows, and eventually moved into a place. First was West End Warehouse here in Atlanta, and then moved out of there to a place called The Church, which happens to be this building.
I was gonna ask you because I didn't obviously I did my research. I know that you guys were hosting something at The Church, and I was wondering, is this The Church that you guys eventually ended up buying out?
Yeah, so. Crazy enough, this is The Church, and so we came full circle. But so The Church was one of the most significant. Well, in my eyes, at least, but it's a fairly legendary weekly EDM show. I mean, it was every Friday night we came in. It was Friday at that point, but we came in. It was a proper rave at that point. So we came in. We brought sound, lighting, a keg behind the bar, you know. But if we heard the cops were coming, we'd go hide the keg kind of a thing. So it was underground. It was really underground.
Okay.
And we did that all the way through the 90s into the early 2000s here. This was actually a banquet hall. Here and but we would come in and bring it all in and then bring it all out when the sun came up.
So in a sense, how in New York we just call it a rave. It's just a rave.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a warehouse. Wonderful
was,
music. Wonderful
was,
time.
Yeah.
Get in, get out. Like,
yeah, and it, the definition exactly. There is quite a bit different than it used to be. You know, it had negative connotations back in the late 90s and early
2000s. Right.
You know,
I guess the first
like underground
thing
and illegal and
illegal. Exactly.
Right. And now it's all somewhat mainstream, and it's on every. You know, electronic music is on every commercial and integrating with hip hop and country music even. So you hear it everywhere. But anyway, that segued into eventually. The weekly was at church. They bought it back and became a church again, actually. And then we moved out. I started law school when the music and the industry itself was taking a little bit of a lull because of the negative connotations in the media. Disco Donnie was having some issues in New Orleans and things like that. And he luckily continued on and won that case against the Rave Act, it was called, where they were actually prosecuting the promoter for drug use inside of the events. And so anyway, it got overturned, but it was a long federal battle. And then eventually, a couple of years after that, we felt like the music was actually starting to come rebound a little bit.
Pick up again.
Yeah, and so Madeline and I met, and we were going out, and you want to tell that little story?
Yeah, sure. So Glenn and I, we met in 2008, right after I had just graduated from Florida State University. And I was wanting to be a talent agent at the time, but I decided that I need to go home and live with my parents for a little bit to kind of get my feet on the ground and figure out what I was going to do. And so I was here in Atlanta, and I ran into Glenn at a bar. He was behind the bar, and I went up to the bar and I wanted a glass of water. and he comes from all the way out the other side.
I couldn't help it. I had good eyes.
I
got
to get out of the way.
I don't even think I was on his side.
Coming through.
I think I got this one. So he came up to me and goes, "You're really cute." And so he gave me his number.
Very original line.
So it was very sincere.
I'd like to think that Glenn definitely had a better line than that, but you know, we'll go with, with her version for now.
The truthful story is sometimes better. I don't know.
Yes, but it was cute. It was sincere.
Did he slide over, you know, with the b-boy moves, kind of like, you know, here's the water and then bring it back, or no?
I wish.
That would have been good.
That would have been really good. But so, long story short, he got my number. We went on a date. Our first date, it was at a place called, it was Taste of Atlanta. It was like this little festival thing that was going on. And he was 2 hours late.
Yeah. Oh boy.
And I only live 5 minutes up the street. Oh, if that tells you at all how nervous I was.
Which this has been something for that we continue to do. I think we're always 2 hours late together at this point. But it was funny, and I was like, oh well, I guess I'm gonna leave. And so I was on my way out, and I just happened to run into him as I was leaving, and I saw him, said, "Wow, he's really cute." And so we stayed, and I decided I'd give him another chance. And so
she started asking a little bit more about.
Yeah, I asked a couple more questions about him. And I said, you know, what are you into? And my first question was, what kind of music do you like? And he said, I like electronic music. And I was just floored because I was in Georgia and nobody here knew what electronic music was. And I had just come from, I'm from Europe originally. And then in Florida, there's a lot of electronic music influence. So I definitely was into it. And so that sparked my interest. And then I said, we talked about both wanting to be talent agents, because at the time he wanted to be a talent agent. And
that's why I went to law school originally. I thought I was going to go out to California and be a big, big agent and represent music. But
and so just this,
in a sense, you're still working almost in the same field. You're
for sure, representing talent.
Yeah, in a different way. In fact, in a better way, I think. Yeah. So yeah, we just both had similar interests, and immediately it was a hit. And then I've never stopped hanging out with him since.
Yeah, we would walk around random places, and I didn't. So real quick part of that is, like, we would walk around, and I didn't really want to tell her originally that I was this huge rave promoter, right, just because of the negative connotations and all that. So I would tell her I was doing commercial real estate, and she was from a conservative family, so I had no idea. So I was like, I just finished law school and I'm going to go be an agent maybe, and I do commercial real estate, but I didn't say anything about this promotion side. But she found out about it eventually, just because I knew everybody.
Yeah, everybody knew who he was. Like, everybody.
Just walking around like, hey, last night was fun. And
so she goes, like, why don't we do it? And, you know, she's like, well, why don't, she was the one actually had the idea.
I was kind of envious because I really wanted to go to one of these parties because they sounded really cool and interesting. And so I was like, well, let's just throw one so I can at least go.
So at that point, you were starting to bring, you guys worked together to bring back kind of these weekly nights. Right. But at that moment when you stopped and went to law school and everything, was it kind of like a life-changing moment for you where you wanted to almost give up this scene that you helped in a sense create?
Yeah, so for me, it was I don't, you know, it's very hard to say. I'm as far as creating, I don't think I was a creator.
Not the scene, but at least for your weekly parties, they've been around for a long time.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I helped bring the music up in the Atlanta market, right, for sure. But, you know, in New York, that's where I grew up in it, you know, so it was in the mid, late 80s, even early 90s when you start hearing those sounds and stuff. So, I think I helped bring some of that flavor down here to Atlanta and keep that realness to it, the integrity of the true rave and that vibe and feel that people that were back in those days and talk about those days of, man, remember when the rave days, it will never be the same. You know, what I certainly do is bring some of that integrity back to the scene and give that, wow, that's that, I hope at least give some of that true, what we call Iris, you know, old school real vibe to any of everything that we touch. So whether it's this, you know, my events here or my event, or, you know, when we do Imagine, we really try to make sure that we get some of that flavor in there, whether that's, you know, and that's all part of quality. Big sound is all, no matter what, my first deconstruct, you know, whatever it was, in my house parties, it was like, no, let's go rent sound, bring it in and return it, you know. But you know, but it was big sound, big, you know, big production, right, making sure everybody had a great time, and part of that, and just the energy, you know, making sure everybody had an amazing time and taking care of your people that came. It sounds so easy and just sort of almost cliche, but it's really customer service, taking care of everybody, making sure they're happy and treating everybody like family. And that's why we're the Iris family or Imagine family coming up. And, you know, we love everybody that helps us out and comes along and has a good time.
Would you say you were coming to a moment where you were almost going to give up on the whole scene? And then kind of when you guys met, you realized, oh, this is a partner, or both of you kind of realized this is a partnership where, you know, you can push what you love at that moment, and you didn't even realize that she would love the same thing.
Oh yeah,
and grow it into.
Yeah, no, that's
a
great
point.
I don't know if I've ever really recognized that as well, but absolutely 100%. Like I always had my info line. In fact, I still have what's called an old school info line, is where you didn't have flyers back then. You'd call the number, and when you called the number, it gave you the address or what was going on. I still have my info line. Crazy that is. That's all.
Still works today.
It still works. I just have to keep it going. I don't want to turn it off. Yeah. But I kept my info line up. I always had like, oh, I kind of want to stay in the world. Like I love it. You know, I had passion, and so that's why I was going to become an agent and do that. But then, yeah, absolutely. And then when we met, and she was like, oh, that sounds like fun. You know, and I was like, are you sure you want to do it? Because it's a commitment. Yeah. But she had a whole nother set of skills that I never had. And so with that team, it was like felt like we were pretty much unstoppable. She was very well organized. She was a marketing genius, and those type of things that really helped us get to another level and just get to where we needed to be. Take my production side and my interest in dance and everything else, and the raw side of it, and put it with a little bit of more organization in it, and it worked. It helped us get to where, you know, the next level, and it still does now. Continue to kind of get. We bounce ideas off each other constantly, and she is a great expert at certain categories and departments, and I, you know, chime in here and there, and I'm, you know, pretty good at some of the other stuff. And then when we get together, it seems like that's when really the magic happens.
Now, being fans of the whole scene, the EDM scene, do you guys end up kind of curating the artists that you want to see personally, and you try to get them into the festival, or how does that come about?
Yes. I think we share a lot of enthusiasm, and we definitely like a lot of artists that I know everyone else really likes it too. So it's sometimes it's a personal victory for us as well when we get to book such a great lineup.
Yeah, it's always a challenge to beat the year before, especially with the budget restrictions that we have being independent. But it's a fine line between getting, it's like a coolness factor versus what will sell tickets factor, because you have to sell tickets to stay in business, but you also want to book the talent that you really feel is like amazing, right? But they may be new, or they may not be as popular yet on the marketing side. So for us, it's like constantly, you know, we'll throw in some of that really cool new stuff that's coming up, but also, you know, put in stuff that we know that we feel is still real, but we'll sell some tickets too. And I think we've done a pretty good job with that, with the multiple stages and different styles of music and that type of stuff.
I'd also say it's not just us. I mean, we have a whole think tank and a whole team that we bounce ideas off of. We're always talking to our fans here at the club, seeing who they like. So definitely a lot of collaboration on.
Yeah, with much younger people, older people, we try to talk to as many people as we can about what kind of music they like.
Would you say is the first person you booked that you were actually excited to see as a fan at the same time?
Yeah. Really cool. Well, Deadmau5 and Pretty Lights, when we booked them together in the same year, it was magical for us, really.
It was like, oh my God, this is awesome, because you're a fan, and then also like, you know, they're coming to your festival.
Yeah, it was amazing. And Tiesto too, when we booked them, that was big.
Bass Nectar. I mean, you know, it's just, it's like, wow, we booked that. It's like a somewhat of a small hurdle or a made it moment, I suppose, you know, like, wow.
Yeah, like a milestone.
Well, I'm sure, once you book one person at a certain caliber, you're like, oh, this opens a whole new door to more, you know.
And it does. It helps. Like, Imagine helps us at Believe here, you know, book talent, and we can parlay those as far as doing a double booking. We'll do one at Imagine, one here, and that helps us get some of the better talent sometimes too, because they don't, a lot of times they want the Imagine, but we want them here too.
Right.
And this night, it's a nice exclusive type environment here. We had Armin here the other day, and it's really a 1,000-cap room, and Armin's playing stadiums everywhere else, but here he is.
Right,
you can see
the
sweat dripping off his head, and you're this close, you know, to Armin, who's like a legendary playing stadium. So it's pretty cool. We like it. It's interesting.
So I want to go back to your first reunion party. Like, after you haven't hosted a party for a while, and even in your first reunion party, you had mentioned that you guys actually, it wasn't as successful as you would have hoped. It was a little disappointing, I think you mentioned, that first one. So now you came to a hurdle where your first Imagine Festival, you're losing money. Your first comeback party before that, it was disappointing. For what actually motivates you to put that aside, put that loss aside, and okay, we're going to do it much better the next time around? Because most people would just give up at that moment, or be like, okay, let's cover this and not do it again.
Yeah, so after that first reunion party, I remember Glenn and I, we kind of went, not, I wouldn't say like a depression, you know, but we just kind of were down, right, after the party. But for some reason, him and I didn't talk about it at all. Like, we didn't talk about the idea of doing another event at all. Like, none of us would dare speak about it. But then separately,
the reunion was the first event we did, by the way, together.
separately, we continued to work on our computers, both of us independently, on just our social media, you know, and continuing the brand. And like, we just couldn't stop working on it. We were just both excited, but we wouldn't talk about another party. And then there was one day, I think it was 4 months later, that Glenn was like, hey, so do you want to do another one? And I'm like, yes. And I couldn't wait for him to say, like, ask me if I wanted to do another one. Because I wanted to make sure he was okay with it. And it was his idea. And so as soon as he said he wanted to do it, I was like, yes, I'm on board. And then we started doing another show. And then that's kind of how the weekly came about after that. And same thing with Imagine. But I think Imagine, after that point, we have this tremendous passion. And that you can't put that fire out. You know, that the only way that you fail is if you quit. So we just have to carry on and keep working on it.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I would just say that Reunion was at this building, which was the old church. We had already moved out. Mm-hmm. It had become a church, and it was a fight to try to get this venue. But we thought it was the only venue that made sense to do the reunion show was at the church. Right. Well, what we affectionately branded as the church. But it was a fight to get it back for that reunion show. At that point, it was called Celebration Hall. And then after that show, we left. And we were like, the owners at the time didn't treat us properly, what we felt was right. So we left, even though we wanted to stay here, we left, and we were looking for a new venue to do something. And so we went into a dive bar on a pretty poor part of town, and the guy, and we only wanted to do a monthly at the time. And he was like, listen, we don't want a monthly, we want a weekly. I said, well, we don't have time. And he goes, no, you need to do a weekly or we're not doing business. And I said, all right, fine, we'll do a weekly, you know. It's basically the same amount of work, and I obviously have all the experience in the weekly, so it made sense. So we just started the weekly, and it again, it was all about what I felt were the fundamentals. You know, it's good sound, good lighting, treating customer right, good security. Because at that time we were actually going out, and people were doing other shows with Radio Shack lighting, and this is when the dubstep sound was coming in, and it was becoming very popular again. You could tell. And it was a new wave. And we just, like, we felt almost obligated. Like, we had to come back and give them a little taste of, like, what we felt was the real underground and what it should feel like to go to a to go to a proper event, a proper rave, whatever you want to call it. Because kids weren't being treated right. They were paying $30 to get in some hole in the wall, and the sound sucked and the lighting sucked. And we were going to
the best they had. So
yeah, we're like, this is, it was like, these kids are going to this, and they're not getting the right feel. They're not getting the right experience. And yet they're calling it what we used to call, you know, what a rave or a proper EDM, you know? And I was like, that's, you know, we felt obligated to, like, show them, no, this is what it's really about. And, you know, and that's when we came out and we're like, here, check this out. You know, big sound, big lighting, you know, just craziness going on, LED lighting, just wild. You know, just you go in there and you're like, whoa, you open the doors and you get, oh man, it's a new world. You know, I can forget about all my worries for a minute and just have an incredible time and then leave and be like, whew, I want to go. I'm ready to go back. You know, when's the next one? Next week. Okay, well, we'll be there next week.
We'll be here. Yeah.
And I'll say too that we wanted to put the D back in EDM because we noticed that people weren't dancing, and we're big about dancing. Obviously, he's a big dancer. So we're like, it's electronic dance music.
Yeah,
so dance.
Yeah, yeah, you got to dance.
Don't just stand there.
New York. I mean, New York is a place where people kind of like, you know, most of the time people stand around in New York. You have a certain section of dance and everybody else. But now they're starting to do the
dance.
And
they used to dance, man. I mean, the tunnel and the Meatpacking District and Sound Factory. I mean, we used to get down, you know. Even my original parties, we would throw linoleum down on the ground and just get crazy. Whether it was in the park, we would carry linoleum in the back of the truck and, you know, roll it out. And it was like, all right, let's get down. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, so that was fun. In fact, right here, this used to be carpeted back in the old days, and we would throw the linoleum down.
Right in the middle of the floor,
tape it down with duct tape. I mean, it was cool. I mean, we used to dance. We used to get down. That was part of the fun.
So even those weekly parties, you had mentioned that they were great, but you still couldn't do everything you wanted to do personally. So you guys eventually got into this space. So what would you say you're offering here that you weren't able to offer before? Because now this is run exactly the way you want it to be run. So what would you say is the difference between this party here in comparison to everything you've done before?
Well, I think we've always wanted to have high ceilings so that we can do a lot more. And so we definitely achieved that in this building, where we're able to do crazy lasers and crazy balloons that come down. You know, our idea is to have tons of performers, always like engaging 360-degree experience. We're able to bring the artists that we'd like to bring. We're restricted in the room that we were at because it was a small room, so you can only get to a certain level.
Right, right.
So here we can, so far, I mean, we've been able to bring anybody that we want. And so that's a real... I think that's a real achievement for us.
Yeah, another thing, another important factor was it wasn't all of our staff. So because it was someone else's house, let's call it, we didn't have much control of the security or how they're acting. Although we had a big part because we were bringing a good show there.
Right.
But it wasn't my responsibility to say, hey, you know, you're acting wrong, you got to go. Here, you know, it's our venue. You know, we can say, hey, you know, you're not acting the way I want you to act to our guests. Like, these guys saved, you know, $5, didn't eat at McDonald's the other day to come to the show. Like, it's very important
right.
that we treat them just as well as we
right.
treat the guy with a VIP table over there. I mean, they're not just our bread and butter, but they're the ones that give everyone salary here. But it's the ones that create this energy and the vibe in this room. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes this business continue to thrive. And so, you know, that's what's important, is to be able to say, if you aren't acting right, if you're not acting the way that we think these guests should be treated, then you're not going to be here anymore. And, you know, that type of discretion is what we really were looking for, a blank canvas, not just on the staff, but also on the creativity inside. You know, when it wasn't our house, you're like, turn the volume down, you know, you're bothering the neighbors or whatever it is, you know, or the bartender is charging too much for a drink or too much for water, won't give a free water out when the person's obviously super dehydrated. You know, just little details of how your customer support, customer services, and again, just back to creating what I would want or what she would want when we go out or we go to a festival, whatever it is, it's extremely important to give that experience.
So you really focus on every detail of the party, in a sense. You're kind of like almost bringing back exactly what you guys enjoyed.
Yeah.
And because you just said, from the bartender to the security guard, you know, most people don't focus on on those stuff. They're all focused on the big picture and who's standing back there.
Yeah.
So, you know, to hear that from people that are hosting the party, like, I'm excited to be here tomorrow now.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll be fun. Yeah, we're happy to have you. It's all about the experience. So, yeah, of course, you know, big sound, big LED wall
right.
is great. But it also comes down, every single person is a reflection of the event. And if someone has one little piece of a bad time in any part of the experience, they're going to remember. They're not going to remember the big sound and lighting and all the great time they had the whole night. All they're going to remember is, oh, I just got a weird attitude from the security guard, or, you know, and so we got to be really, really careful. And we're not perfect with Imagine or with this venue. It's a constantly trying to improve and constantly trying to get feedback so that we get as well as we can to create the best experience possible for everybody.
So now, in closing, let's bring it back to the festival. I want to know personally from you guys, what artists, because now you've been, I guess, 6 years running? Or six
this is year
or
seven?
This is year six. All right, so 6 years running.
Depending on your research.
Right, exactly. That's a test for me now.
Yeah.
So 6 years running, and you're booking all these different artists and different DJs and stuff to perform. Who would you say has surprised you the most throughout the 6 years or throughout this whole experience? What DJ has surprised you the most with their growth or their...
This is definitely a good one. Elenium is a huge one, right? You want to tell about that one a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he's massive. But as far as for our lineup, I think Rez has really been doing
yeah,
great.
Yeah, I think it was a two-part question. Well, were you saying like who
has surprised you personally?
About
like
doing
you
well?
Know, yeah, you because you said you were booking
in the whole
like
time?
Yeah, like you said you were booking like local talent as well.
Yeah.
So it has an artist kind of like
come
you've
up.
Booked him young, and then you've seen him come up, and
yeah.
you know. Host a huge event like
yeah,
host
for sure, a few of those.
I think I mean Elenium. He started at we had him at an Irish show, and now he's just selling out Madison Square Garden. And he's crushing it.
Madeline saw that his marketing branding, of course, was like, that guy's gonna
I
make
knew
it.
He'd make
there,
it.
You know? Of course, his music is good.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Well, we have some Aaliyah Culver,
yep.
Eddie Gold, Ployd. There's a bunch of locals at Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, sorry if I missed you, but there are some great local talent here in Atlanta that we love, and you know I think
ATLians are coming up.
ATLians are doing really well for themselves, and there's Jungle Brothers from a while ago, and Tommy Sunshine actually came out of Atlanta. He's moved now, but again, a bunch of people that are coming up out of Atlanta, I think, and there was Andre from Outkast was a while ago was said what did he say.
You know,
I always forget quotes and names.
The South has something to say.
The South has something to say. That's right. And so that was you know, we kind of, I think we follow that.
It's Andre 3000, if you guys didn't catch on.
Andre from Outkast. Andre 3000 from Outkast said the South has something to say when he was at the awards, and we agree with him. South has something to say, and he was referring to hip hop, I believe, but overall, in the electronic music community as well, we're here and we're not going anywhere. We outlasted a bunch of other festivals that came through, whether it's Tomorrow World or Counterpoint, some other great festivals. They did a great job, but we're still here and we're still independent. They weren't, you know, they were monsters. It was sort of the David and Goliath feel, and you know, we've been able to somehow survive and keep it going. And again, we have to give the credit to the just doing the right thing and providing
the
best experience.
The local community too for really supporting us.
Supporting us for sure.
So tell me about the different packages that a fan has to, available at Imagine. I know you have the regular admission, you have the VIP, you guys have the Ocean View VIP, which is a little bit different, and then you have like a Platinum package, I think, this year. So yes. Tell me like the difference between...
So, well, you have your general admission pass, which gives you access to all the music, all the stages.
Silent Disco.
Silent Disco. Well, that's for camping. So you have general admission, and then you can add camping to that, and then that'll give you access to the Silent Disco and the Imaginarium and all the really cool campground activities that we have. And you, if you want a little bit more comfort, shorter lines, nicer bathrooms, you can get VIP. And so you can enjoy that. In VIP, we have, it's called the VIP Island, which is right by the main stage. It has VIP bars, additional vendors, better viewing and nice shade and better bathrooms and all that good stuff. And then we have the Ocean View experience, which that gives you elevated view. You get table service, which is really nice for some people. And then we have the new thing, which is called the Backstage Platinum Pass. So that's for those who really want to get a behind the scenes look at what's going on. So you can actually access VIP, you can get on the deck, and then you can also go backstage to your own Platinum Lounge, which will give you access to the stage, and you can have a side view of the stage and like really
it's
see
also not
everything
a bad networking opportunity potentially.
Yeah, it's
too.
Great. There's a lot of industry people that are back there. A lot of our people who work for us, media like us will probably be there, but it gives you a chance to rub shoulders with some people in the industry.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, like, are they when they are backstage, are they able to actually like have a sort of meet and greet with their favorite artists, or how restricted are they?
To be honest, we really want it to be more of a more casual thing. Like, we don't want the artists to have to. We want the artists to just be natural and just hang out. So at that point, you can grab a drink, and then you might actually be right next to an artist. That's how close of an experience it is.
So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to check out the Imagine Festival. It's September 19th through 22nd.
Yep.
Right? 19, 20, 21, 22. 4 days. 19th through 22nd. You just heard the Platinum package. Gives you backstage access. You can meet your favorite artist there. You have the VIP package. You have the Ocean View with table service if you want to stunt on your friends a little bit and have the sparkles come your way. And then, obviously, with the general admission, you get everything that's part of the festival between, well, the whole aquatic theme that you guys
experience.
Have run on. You get the whole experience regardless. You don't need to get the VIP and Platinum to enjoy
the
festival.
There's something for everybody.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So any closing statements, any last-minute plugs you guys want to get in, or...
I don't know. I feel like I said it all. No, we just really appreciate the opportunity to talk to everybody.
Thank you. Thank you guys again for being on the show. And I look forward to, you know, catching the festival and catching the event here tomorrow. So, and everybody, all our fans, they'll be able to see the whole experience. And hopefully I'll catch some of them at the festival itself on September 19th, starting September 19th.
Thank you, Questionable Behavior, for having us out. I'm Glenn.
And I'm Maddie.
Thanks a lot, guys.